And you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Don't forget to WhatsApp and text your views to us to 086 60 25,000. A caller says we've no water in the Ardsmore area of Gortlehawk, no showers for people going to work and off once again. We're not notified. Ishka Aaron is a joke, except a very unfunny joke. The Westbrook Bridge in Buncrana and the Cockhill Road in Buncrana are closed, we're told. They weren't supposed to close until after 9 to allow school and work traffic to get through. So that's a message that came in just before 9. Housing in Ireland is a luxury. This would never be. How is this handled in other European countries? The government have again helped the rich by giving money to McDonald's and horse racing, the sport of kings. People will die because they cannot afford heating or food due to outrageous rent. Well, there was no mechanism, the government say, there was no mechanism to give your sort of, you know, average company, your coffee shop, sorry, your sandwich shop, your restaurant, your small restaurant, your cafe. There was no way to give them a VAT break. Without actually giving KFC, Burger King, McDonald's the same tax break. So they're, you know, I think McDonald's made 42 million in Ireland last year, and now they're going to make even more money because of the VAT reduction. But you can't really tailor it. It's against EU laws, so to speak. Fianna Fáil TD, Pat the Coke Galler is with him now. Good morning, Pat. How are you getting on?
I'm good, Greg.
Thanks for joining us. Sorry, I mean, I know last night's meeting was meant to be private, but there was a running commentary as everyone was speaking. I suppose, you know, how would you judge the mood in the meeting, I suppose, post Micheál Martin's comments on the Jim Gavin controversy?
Well, first of all, let me say, Greg, that as a result of our meeting in Killybegs on Sunday evening, I was buoyed up to bring a motion to the party last night in relation to the proposal from the ISIS to reduce the mackerel quota by 70%, but of course it was not to be. But I did get an opportunity to raise it at the outset and will be doing it. But the meeting then, of course, was all about the election, about the appointment of Jim Gavin as our candidate and the repercussions of the decision late on Sunday night to withdraw from the presidential election.
You described the selection of the party, that the presidential candidate was a contrived majority, which was heavily influenced by the leadership. Do you want it reformed, that the whole process reformed?
Well, first of all, let me say that the vote was 41-29. That's 12 votes, 6 votes from Gavin to Billy Kelleher, would have meant a tied vote. But I have no doubt in my mind, but it was a contrived majority. It's a phrase that I learned from the late Neil T. Blaney years ago about the majority in Northern Ireland. And what is a contrived majority? As a winning majority was deliberately engineered to achieve a particular outcome. And that's exactly what it was. And it was stated by many members last night that no one was under any pressure. Now, when the leader of the party rings you or a senior minister rings and discusses the election, that in itself is a coded message. And when they tell us that they're in favour of one candidate or the other, that definitely have an influence. It was said that no one was frog marched. Of course, it was a democratic in theory, but it was heavily influenced by the leadership.
And were you called by Micheál Martin or someone on his behalf?
No, I was called by another minister I won't name, but I wasn't called by Micheál Martin, and I think he knows me too well that I wouldn't take any diktat or that I wouldn't be influenced like that. I indicated at the very outset when I met Jim Gavin that I favoured someone from the Fianna Fáil gene pool. Didn't necessarily mean that it was someone who was in the parliamentary party. It was someone who would have an association with the party. There were a number of those from the outside, whether it be Bertie Ahern, Eamon O'Keefe, Mary Hannafin, and I think I was proven right. There was due diligence, but the due diligence didn't unearth the issues that culminated in the decision of last Sunday.
And I mean, what do you have a wealth of experience within Fianna Fáil, within politics, within life in general? Do you think people like yourself should have been asked their opinion, at least to even as a sign of respect to what you've given to that party, but also actually to get an understanding that you would have of the electorate and how it, any decision like this might have been received by the same electorate.
Well, I made that point at the meeting last night, and I'm not talking outside the school, but as soon as I had spoken at the parliamentary party meeting, I had messages from national journalists asking me, did I say this and did I say that? It would appear that someone was leaking from the meeting, because they had exact detail. But having said that, I did make it very clear that I went into the Dáil 44 years ago. I'd been in the parliamentary party 38 years ago, except for two short periods. And I thought, the very least, when I heard Micheál Martin say that he consulted widely. Now, widely would have should have included me, having spent 38 years and have come through nine Dáil elections, three European elections, and but if not for the interference of the leadership in 2014, I would have been elected. But I wasn't listened to at the time when I was told it was mathematically impossible to lose, but it was. So I have all that experience, and it wasn't asked, and I would have given a very clear view of my own opinion, and that there would have reflected the opinion of the party and indeed the electorate generally in Donegal. I was one who very much favoured someone having the Irish language, and when I speak to young people now and who they're going to vote for, they say, well, we're going to consider somebody who speaks the Irish language.
And do you have someone in mind that you think would have been a good candidate from that Fianna Fáil gene pool? I mean, obviously, your own name was mentioned, and I think this deep into it now, you know, you would be doing very well, I would imagine, to be completely honest with you, nationally. But I don't know if you're comfortable talking about whether or not you would like to have been offered the chance, or if you have someone else in mind, Pat.
Of course, I was very honoured when John McAteer of the Tyrconnell Tribune ran with the story, and of course I would have had an interest, and my name has been in the past on a ballot paper in 16 counties from Clare to Donegal and from Leash Offaly back to there was no question of me even being considered at all. So there were other candidates, I believe, and I think that had Bertie Ahern been given the opportunity, or Eamon O'Keefe, or Mary Hanafin, or indeed Maura Geoghegan Quinn, who served as minister, who served as a commissioner and auditor, any of those people. But we were told that nobody put their hand up. But the fact of the matter is, the process that we're being told would be unveiled at the end of August, it was too late at that stage. And I think the approach was made to Jim Gavin because it was felt that because of his years in the Defence Forces, his years as manager of Dublin, having been involved in the inner city Dublin, all of that. But I don't believe that the people of Ireland were too interested in that. They wanted somebody who was in the gene pool. Now, of course, reference was made to Mary McAleese, that she came from the edge. But Mary McAleese, in all fairness to her, wore her political colours on her sleeve, and she ran for the Dáil in Dublin. So also, so did the other person who has been mentioned, was Carvalho Daly, who stepped up when the Erskine Childers died and 2 years into his presidency. And Carvalho Daly stood for Fianna Fáil twice in Dublin. So they had that track record. But having said all that, there's a great deal of sympathy for Jim Gavin, whom I met. Yep. He came to Donegal to meet me. I met him there, and for his wife, his children and his parents. And he's really now, obviously, a man that has such a high profile. It's a very difficult time for him.
For sure. There was no, obviously, sort of express questioning of Micheál Martin's leadership. I think the closest was that maybe the party needs to look at where it goes from January 27 onwards. I mean, given the fact that maybe this budget's not exactly the budget you'd like to have seen Fianna Fáil deliver, given the question marks over Micheál Martin's decision-making, do you think it's time now the party begins to look at its next direction?
Well, we have a roadmap now. It was agreed at the party meeting last night that was set up a small group to report on the circumstances surrounding all of this from the first day. That there will be the terms of reference will come before us next week. We can amend those terms of reference, and I would be anxious that the people in that committee would be backbenchers. And after that, I believe they should report within a matter of weeks, and then we can take the next steps.
But would you have faith in Micheál Martin's leadership at the moment?
I'm like the rest. There was no question of that last night, but if you heard my contribution, then you'll possibly find an answer there.
So that's no.
I didn't say. You know, I'm.
I don't want to interpret you. I respect your words, Pat.
No,
I don't want to interpret them, if you know what I mean. So, would you, at the moment, have faith in Micheál Martin's leadership?
You don't have to interpret. I let the listeners interpret what I'm saying. And I've been a loyal member in the parliamentary party for 38 years, and I think possibly I'm going further than I had intended. Even though there were leakages, that's for others to answer those questions, but we will wait and see what the developments are over the next number of weeks, and we're looking for early answers. We must realise that we have the presidency of the European Union in the second half of next year, and that's very important to Ireland. So we'll let matters develop over the next number of weeks.
Thank you very much indeed. That's Fianna Fáil Deputy Pat the Cope Gallagher, who we at squeeze in, as you can hear the bell tolling down in the Dáil. Before we get the bingo numbers, good luck if you're playing today, because it is jackpot day. We welcome onto the programme now Senator Chris Andrews of Sinn Féin. Senator, good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Greg.
How are you keeping?
Good, yeah. Just, I suppose, happy to be home. But also, and, you know, just to say that I've had massive support and it's been really appreciated. And, you know, I suppose that all contrasts with how Palestinians are being treated in Gaza and Palestinian prisoners. You know, our time in prison was challenging, but it bears no resemblance to how Palestinians are treated. Palestinians who have, you know, facing genocide and man-made famine in Gaza. So, you know, whatever issues I have, I can't help but think how difficult it is for Palestinians.
Yes, I know. And I do understand for any of you, it's a challenge to sort of talk of your poor experiences when the whole motivation for this was to highlight the plight of an entire population. And of course, thinking on as well, as we must, the Israeli hostages too, that must be going through an awful time at the moment. We might get on to some progress in relation to that. But you boarded this flotilla. How long were you on it for, Chris?
Well, the boat, we left Tunis in North Africa on the 14th of September. Mm. And we were sailing. There was about 50 boats starting off. There was about 41 boats at the end. So there was wear and tear among the fleet. And that was with flotilla that size, there's bound to be issues, mechanical issues, and there was medical evacuations. And then we had the time when the drones hit us with blast bombs. So there was always something going on. So it took a lot longer than you would have envisaged. So we were about a bit over 2.5 weeks at sea.
Was your boat targeted by drones, or was it other boats in the flotilla?
There was a number of boats. My boat, I was on the Spectre, and my boat was hit 4 times one night by drones.
So when we talk about drones, because there's different type of drones now. So we know the drones that maybe are being used in Ukraine and Russia. And then we know sort of like a drone that people might see around the place. So are you hearing a buzz? Are these large drones? Can you see them? Do you see them carrying something and it being dropped? This might not be important, but it's never, I've not heard it actually referenced. So just give us a sense of that.
Yeah. So so because we were on high alert during the journey, you're always looking out. We had a night watch, a 3-hour shifts of night watch. So you're from seven till 10, you know, and so on through the night for 3-hour watches. But so you're watching for drones, and when they come close, you know, that's the time to get down into the boat. So, but you do, you can see that in the distance, you can see lights, like a red or green light, and they'd be buzzing around. And when they get close, then, so these, the first drone got very close. It was, it's always at night. So you see, you, it's very hard to actually see what the drone looks like.
Yeah, I get you.
And then just bang, and then there was four hits, and they had sulfur, some sort of sulfur in each explosion. So, but it is,
that's an irritant, is it, Chris? That's an irritant, is it? The sulfur?
Yeah, it must be. Yeah. Okay. I think it must. I think someone said it was hydrogen sulfide. So yeah. I'm not sure what impact. I haven't had a chance to really.
Definitely,
look at it,
yeah,
but it smells intensely bad, like obviously egg, and but worse. And if it's too close, we were lucky, I suppose, in that we have two generators up on the top of the boat, and you know, that the fuel for the generators wasn't hit, because that could have been proven fatal. So we were exceptionally lucky.
So fast forward to the boarding. There was an inevitability about it, of course. How does that go? A boat pulls up alongside.
They have like a mothership or a mother boat, mm-hmm. and they send off a couple of Zodiacs for each boat, and then each boat, the two Zodiacs come side by side. They might water cannon if they need. They didn't need to on our boat, but they have this like massively bright light shines down, and then they board the boat, and then obviously all with guns. They warn everybody to get to the front of the boat, and then they board and do a check, and then we were 15 hours sitting in the same position with a gun literally in arms, facing you an arm's length away for 15 hours until we got to the port.
And were you put into that position that people might be familiar with, you know, with footage from Guantanamo Bay, etc., that sort of prisoner position? Yeah.
No, we weren't put in that position then. We were sitting down with our hands around our knees, and you know, for 15 hours, it's a lot. It's a tough position.
Was there any engagement? Did they offer any water, any food, any words at all?
You were allowed to go to the toilet. They'd let you go to the toilet, and no, they weren't. It wasn't. You know, it was a hostile environment. Mm. And then they take you off. They manhandle you off the boat. They put you onto the docks, and then we were down in that. You were kneeling down for 2 hours. I'd say we were kept there with our head down in the intense heat. And then we were processed and then brought to, in a prison van, we were brought to the jail, high security jail. And we were kept in a holding cell. There was about 60, 70 people in a holding cell. You could only just stand up in it. Mm. And then we were assigned to our cells, and there was about 10 or 12 in a cell.
At that point, did you say, well, normally what happens here is that there'll be some negotiation and then we'll get out and then we'll be deported. But was there any time where you were uncertain that, is this the day that they're going to make an example? Or do you know what I mean? Was there any certainty as to how you're going to be treated over the coming hours and days?
No, none at all. I think, you know, you did have a real fear that this was going to be a long term. Mm. Like, obviously, we got out after 5 or 6 days, whatever. But you did feel that it was going to be a long term stay, particularly on the first night. They wake you up every night, every hour and a half, just to stop you sleeping and become disorientated. But in one of the wake-ups at about 3 o'clock, we think it was, they came in six IDF fellas, five with guns, and a Malinois dog, a security dog, came in barking, and they told us, get back up against the back wall. So we got back up against the, sat up, obviously did what they said, went up against the back of the wall of the cell, and in came Ben Gavir, the Minister for Securities in Israel, and he ordered. He told us that we were baby killers, we were Hamas supporters, we were wanted to just kill Jews, and that we were going to be there for a very long time, that it was a terrorist prison, and we were going to be there for a long time, not to think that we'd be out soon. So obviously...
it was psychological torture. I mean, I don't think I'm overstating it, but waking you up, disrupting sleep, withholding essentials, placing those thoughts in your mind... he obviously didn't believe that to be true, but that was a form of psychological torture. I don't think that's a stretch. In terms of food and water,
well, we drank the toilet water that was there, and the food. Many of us didn't eat food for the stay because. You know, you just don't know what's going to happen. And also we were protesting against being illegally held. Like, the reality is, when you think about it, citizens from 44 different nations were kidnapped from international waters while they were on a non-violent, peaceful mission to bring aid to Gaza. And yet Israel faces no consequences from any of those nations. Like, it's staggering, really, in 2025 that it...
Why is that?
Because Israel have dismantled international law and there's no consequences. They've have no consequences for their actions. You know, they've committed genocide, they've enabled a man-made famine, and you know, they face no consequences. And
just for an example, in the last couple of days, the Irish government was warned about introducing the Occupied Territories Bill by lobbyists in the United States. And, you know, there are those that would feel that that's not the first time that has been expressed. And this is maybe why we're foot dragging until such time as there's a resolution. Is that the level of influence? Is that how Israel are pulling the strings around the world then? So, because as you say, 44 countries, you'd imagine there'd be one outlier.
Yeah, you would, yeah. Well, look, I think that Israel has dismantled international law and order. So it's the law of the jungle now internationally. So Israel, you know, are powerful and they're wealthy, and America are powerful and wealthy, and so they control it. Small countries, Ireland, Palestine, we have no access to international law and order in reality.
No, we don't. But we do have the ability as a nation to take a stand, diplomatic stand, or whether it be whatever it might be. We do have the ability to actually step out from that 44 and call it for what it is, and maybe take some sort of a meaningful response that indicates that whilst the rest of the world might accept that international law has been dismantled, we don't. And yet neither did the other 43, do that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You're absolutely right. And we do have an opportunity. We could pass the original Occupied Territories Bill, but instead... the government are looking to water it down and to give us a yellow pack version, which is hugely disappointing that they would do that. And, like you say, we have an opportunity to step forward, lean into, making a stand and sanctioning Israel. You know, even just in a sporting context, in so many contexts, we could do that. And the government have failed to do that constantly.
Just back to your treatment, and again, also conscious that this is nothing compared to what people in Gaza are experiencing. But in terms of your treatment, was there any humanity to it? Was there any politeness to it? You know, was it all shouting and pushing and
At gunpoint, everything we were told to do was at gunpoint. There was nothing. There appeared to be absolutely no humanity at all. There's one fella that. Part of the mission, he was in his mid-70s. He he's a diabetic. He needed insulin. For 3 days, we were shouting at the guards to get us insulin and get him insulin. And for 3 days, he was left without insulin. He could have died, but you know, and so they showed no humanity at all, and they were aggressive, and everything was done at gunpoint.
I know you're on the clock here, but just in relation to the peace deal that seems to have been struck, phase one has been agreed. It's very interesting how you framed Israel and America. What will happen once these hostages, these Israeli hostages, are rightfully released? You know, what will stop? What would stop Israel? The US says they're committing to do so, but how you framed their attitude to international law would make you wonder what happens next. What is your reaction to this deal struck overnight, and how do you think it plays out in a brief or a long form, as you like to answer?
Well, look, I suppose Palestinians have not had justice for 70, 80 years. I was on a flotilla in 2011. The conditions in Gaza then was like, it was like an open air prison at that stage. And things obviously haven't got any better since then. Palestinians have not had justice in decades and decades. So when we talk about peace, and that is the objective, is to have peace. We all want peace. The difficulty, in my view, is that peace rarely lasts unless there's justice. So in any deal, Palestinians need to have justice. They need to be seen. Justice needs to be done and seen to be done. And I'm not convinced that will happen. So, I'm not sure how it'll all play out. But I think the priority needs for justice for Palestinians and peace will follow then.
Thank you for your time.
Thanks very much.
Goodbye. That's Senator Chris Andrews of Sinn Féin, detained by Israel while on board the Global Summit flotilla en route to Gaza. Obviously, some still questioning whether or not there were drones. The Israelis tried to disprove that, say it was flares that accidentally came back onto the boat and it was imagined. I see Darren commenting there's no drones, it's been proven it was themselves. Well, you've got a senator there saying clearly that there were drones, he witnessed them, he observed the lights, he got the smell, the eggy smell of the sulfur, the irritation on the skin. If you want to not believe that, that's completely up to you. I can't convince you otherwise, but you have to be presuming that he's completely making that up, and that the footage I've seen, separate to that one footage that tried to indicate it was a flare, if it is that one video, Darren, I'll speak directly to you. If it was that one video of the flare, have a look at that video again without it being framed by anyone. And, you know, stuff has to go up before it comes down. And it doesn't go up, it just comes down. But anyway, listen, thank you to Senator Chris Andrews. You're welcome back to the Nigel Noon Show. Joined on it now by RTE radio presenter Lottie Ryan. Lottie, good morning to you. How are you keeping?
I am excellent. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Great to chat to you. And you're out there speaking, and I think it's always incredibly brave when anyone speaks of their own experience, but it's always with a view to trying to help others or to give others a voice. And this is off the back of your recent discovery that you started perimenopause. Now, when you say the recent discovery, it was it evident in hindsight that it started perhaps long before you put a name on it?
Oh, absolutely. I think I had started maybe probably the guts of a year ago to just not really feel like myself. And as we all tend to do, I suppose, putting it down to life and stress and, you know, thinking, oh, sure, I'm the mum of a 4-year-old toddler and I'm not getting enough sleep and I've got a very stressful job and all these things. I was kind of attributing to the fact that I was low on energy, you know, probably not feeling the most confident in myself. My brain fog was not good and I just wasn't sleeping great and all these different things that I was kind of fobbing off at the time to just life.
Yeah, and you're kind of trying to deal with all that and at the same time, you know, hold down a busy job, you know, take up various opportunities, family life as well. That's a lot of balls to keep in the air, isn't it?
It's a lot. And, you know, like everybody, you know, I'm a wife, I'm a mother, I'm a daughter, I'm a sister, I'm a friend. You've got all these different hats that you're putting on all the time. So I think, you know, it's very easy to just say, oh, but sure, that's what's wrong with me. I'm just, I have a lot going on and I'm stressed and there's just a lot on my plate. And I think after a couple of months, I just decided, well, you know, maybe I should be able to cope with it a bit better then. So maybe it's not just stress. Maybe there is something going on inside me that needs a little bit of help and a little bit of figuring out. So I think if something like that is going on for a considerable amount of time, it's always important to go and talk to a medical professional and see, is there something else going on?
So, I mean, perimenopause in its most literal sense is around menopause or the beginning of menopause. And in this context, really, and this is where the information is it's sort of breaking through the perception of when it starts or when it might start in terms of age.
Yeah, because I think when you think of a woman in her 30s, well, for me anyway, I didn't think that the word menopause existed for us, to be honest with you, because the image that people have is probably of this, you know, a lady with cats in her hair and, you know, she hasn't left the house in a while and she's going a bit mad. And it's just, that is just not the reality of it. And I think because the conversation wasn't really being had amongst my group of friends, I wasn't educated on it and I just wasn't aware of it. And once I started having those chats with the women in my life, probably initially with my own mother, I realized when she said to me, well, Lottie, you know, that began for me at your age. And I went, oh, okay. No, I didn't know that.
Nice info, Mom.
When I decided it was time to start checking it. Yeah, thank you, genetics. I decided it was time to start researching and figuring out what was going on with my hormone health.
Everybody's different. It's subjective, Lottie. But psychologically, too, it's something arriving in your life that maybe you hadn't thought of, or if you had, you thought it was down the line. I'm not sure if it makes, you know, if it can play with the mind in terms of, don't know, future family plans or even just, you know, yourself or what you feel about yourself. Is that a significant factor, you know, in the general conversation?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, by just the very nature of what perimenopause and menopause is in itself, it is us, you know, you're losing your eggs. And so things like family planning are very, very important discussions that you need to have with your significant other and your GP to figure out what is the right route for you to take as you embark on this journey. I mean, personally, to be totally honest with you, I was relieved when I was told that's what was going on with me, because when I initially went to my GP saying I didn't feel myself and gave all my symptoms, I was told I was fine and that there was nothing wrong with me. And I left that appointment and I, to be honest with you, I got into the car and I started crying because I knew I wasn't fine. And I had to do a lot of research and find somebody who specialised in women's hormones to go and get rigorous testing done at very specific times of the month. And when I was then told, oh yeah, this is perimenopause, and you know what, there's ways we can deal with this, I felt relieved.
Yeah, there seems to be a pattern with women's health, doesn't there, be it endometriosis or menopause, perimenopause, in terms of going in and being told it's all in your head or something similar. I'm not saying that was exactly the diagnosis you received, but and one thing from sitting in this seat, Lottie, as well, and talking to women of different ages, be it perimenopause, menopause, is often, and I think sometimes guys get the blame for this sort of ignoring stuff, but there does seem to be a lot of women can tend to put stuff down to something else, or, you know, put on the brain face, try and keep everything together. It must be that or it must be the other. And it's another reminder, I think, regardless of your age, to go to your GP, to advocate, self-advocate. You know, if you, no one knows your body or your mind like yourself, and just to make sure you're on top of everything.
Absolutely. I could not agree more. And I think what I find upsetting and frustrating about going through this experience is I know a lot of women probably would just accept what their first GP tells them because they trust them. And that is the way it should be. Now, I am a stubborn woman, and so I wouldn't accept it. So I kept looking and researching. And, you know, not everyone is going to do that, which is why I felt, you know what, it's so important that if I can speak about this and help people to second question or go and research a bit more, then it's really important I do it. And part of that process, you know, is having really open and honest conversations with the men in your life as well as the women in your life, because they need to understand what's going on too. If I don't fully understand it, how on earth could I expect my husband to?
Yeah, exactly. Because brain fog, people around you will see that maybe not quite as you describe it. We use that word, but that can externally show its way. And many other things as well. So just finally then, in terms of, you know, we can't always go to, it's hard enough to get a blooming appointment with your first GP, let alone be able to switch between them to get second opinions. But is it about, you know, sitting there and going, I appreciate what you're saying, Doc, but, you know, this is what I'm feeling and this is the information I had. I really would prefer if we could maybe look at more testing in this area. And that's what I, when I talk about self-advocacy, that's what I'm talking about. Is that your advice to people? And I think that's across the board in medicine. Trust your own self and make that point.
Absolutely. I think you have to raise your voice. And if you feel like you're not being given the information that you need to fight back against it and speak up. And another thing is to talk to your pharmacist, because I actually found my local pharmacist incredibly helpful. When I went in and said to my local pharmacist, I think I might be at the beginning of this journey, there was no questioning me or giving me a funny look. I was immediately shown, well, look, this is what we have in here to support that journey. And one of the things that I did was I went on Clean Marine Menomin, because it was a very simple, easy one product that had everything in it for perimenopause. And that's what I was recommended. That's what I started taking. That's something that gave me a huge amount of support and help. Okay. But it was my local pharmacist who was the one who recommended it to me. So I think that there are different ways and different routes to get help and support. And you have to just keep using your voice. And part of that is talking to the women in your life as well and seeing what worked for them.
Yeah, and the lads, as you said as well, for various other reasons. Lottie, I should have asked this right at the very beginning, but last question to you. I suppose on reflection, when do you believe that you started menopause? What, like in terms of age, mid-30s or...?
I mean, so I'm 39, and I'd say it's been in the past kind of 6 to 9 months for me, personally. And I think that, do you know, it's even the education around it, to be honest with you, because perimenopause actually goes on for years and years and years. Menopause is like something that happens in the space of 24 hours, and then you're postmenopause. Okay. So I don't think people even know that.
Yeah.
So it's the whole cycle of it. I would love if it was something that was taught in schools alongside periods. I just think it's not something we need to be embarrassed or ashamed about. Women are bloody brilliant, and we should celebrate everything that they go through and hold them by the hand if that's what they need.
Yeah.
Education is power. It takes away the fear. And I just think it's very important to speak about.
Good stuff. And everyone's situation is different, but certainly from the mid-30s on, it would not be very, very rare for perimenopause. Menopause is funny because it happens really, really slowly and then really, really quickly. It's like that, isn't it?
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. I just think if you're not feeling yourself, it's okay to ask questions.
All right, Lottie, thanks for helping us spread the word. Look after yourself. Continued success. Don't forget a big weekend of GEA too. Come up here on Highland Radio with the big deciders to be had. You can listen to it, of course, all here on Highland Radio. But also in terms of the preview, the school show's on tonight. But also from last Monday, the DL debate, which was broadcast, Oisin Kelly in the hot seat this time, broadcast from across the road at Highland Motors as well, previewing the championship deciders this weekend. So if you're into your GEA, we podcast everything as well here of significance. So you can listen back to the DL debate. You can listen to the score tonight live, which I'm sure has to cover some of that as well. But also those shows are available to listen as a podcast from our website, directly from our website. So you can choose to listen whenever it suits you. Even on the way to the match. Wouldn't that be good fun? Thank you to a gentleman who helped me yesterday. My name is Grace. I was visiting my mum in hospital in Letterkenny. My sister flew from New York to visit. She wouldn't know where to park in Letterkenny anymore as she's been away for so long. Her battery had died and she couldn't contact me. I went to the wee Euro car park's office and explained. The man in Eurocar Park drove me in his van to help my sister and find her. He really went above and beyond. His name was James, and I know he drives, one of the blue vans. Thank you so much. Well done, James. Take a bow. In relation to Gaza, come on, were they expecting the red carpet treatment by gate crashing, landing in a foreign country without visas or papers? Well, you see, they were seized in international waters, just to address that first comment. Anti-Semitic propaganda at the highest from the flotilla. No word about hostages. Imagine they can count the lucky stars that it wasn't Hamas that picked them up. That comes in from James. Well, James, I did reference, the hostages, who hopefully now 20 of them are still alive, will be freed very shortly. Read the budget, Greg. The Gavin affair is another distraction from the budget. It was diabolical for middle earners who are going to possibly be down 800 a year. Yeah, indeed, I know. Right, okay, and more coming in. All very valued. Thank you so much on a wide range of topics. It's great for us to have this platform, isn't it, here, to share our opinions and cover the news and highlight features. It's an honour to be part of it.